Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Dan Friedel and Jill Robbins. Later, Brian Lynn presents this week's Technology Report. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Dan Friedel.
About 230 whales beached themselves on the western part of the Australian island of Tasmania. It is the second such incident in recent days. At least half are alive, and animal officials are working to rescue them. They are also trying to understand why the whales got stuck. The whales are stuck on Ocean Beach near Macquarie Harbor in the western part of Tasmania. Exactly 2 years ago, 470 whales became stuck on sand in the same area. That time, about 100 whales were saved, but the rest died. The whales are pilot whales, which weigh between 1,000 and 2,000 kilograms and measure over 6 meters. The International Whaling Commission says pilot whales are the species that most often is beached in large numbers. Some scientists believe it is because they travel in large groups and follow a leader. Tasmania's Department of Natural Resources said a team from the Marine Conservation Program was heading to the area to help the whales. The harbor does not have deep water, and its entrance is known by locals as Hell's Gate. Linton Kringle is a salmon farmer who helped with the rescue in 2020. He told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation this year's work would be more difficult. That time, he said, the whales were in the harbor so people could reach them easily on boats. This time they are outside of the safe area on a beach, which means it will be harder to get boats near them. It's too shallow, way too rough. My thoughts would be to try to get them onto a vehicle if we can't swim them out, Kringle added. Vanessa Parada is a wildlife scientist who studies animals like whales and dolphins. She said, the fact that the whales have gotten stuck around the same place during the same part of the year suggests there might be something environmental here. There was another incident of whales getting stuck in Tasmania on Monday. In the northern part of the island state, 14 sperm whales were found on King Island. One scientist called that incident even more unusual than the pilot whales getting stuck. Olaf Meineke is a marine scientist at Griffith University in Australia. He said warmer ocean temperatures could be forcing the whales into different areas to look for food. When they do this, they are not in the best physical condition because they might be starving. So this can lead them to take more risks and maybe go closer to shore, Meineke said. I'm Dan Friedel.
Japan is the latest country to try to increase its involvement with Africa. The effort comes as China continues to grow its influence on the continent. Many top leaders from around the world have made visits to Africa this year. They include Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, and several European diplomats. Experts see the visits by Western leaders as an attempt to oppose China's power in Africa. They also see them as an attempt to oppose Russia's influence on the continent. Last month, Japan offered to provide African countries with another choice for funds and investment. Japan promised the aid during the 8th Tokyo International Conference on African Development, or TICAD, which took place in Tunisia. Japan also announced at the conference that some $1 billion would go toward support for African countries' debt restructuring, a process where countries make changes to loans in order to avoid failure to pay. Japan said it hopes to be a partner growing together with Africa. In his comments at the event, Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida criticized Russia and seemed to also criticize China. He pointed to the current situation of severe economic inequality and environmental problems in Africa. He called for the conference to deal with issues such as the food crisis caused by Russian aggression against Ukraine and unfair and opaque development finance. When financing is opaque, the details of the loan are not available to the public. Paul Nintulia is a researcher at the Africa Center for Strategic Affairs in Washington, D.C. He took part in two earlier TICAD conferences. He said the description of opaque development finance was definitely a rebuke to China. Some observers say China has been carrying out debt trap diplomacy. In other words, it is letting countries borrow money even when it is clear they cannot repay the loans. In theory, the borrowing country then comes under the political control of the lending country. However, there is increasing agreement among economists that evidence does not support the claims of a debt-trap system by China. China has forgiven loans in many cases and has rarely taken possession of national property. The claim is still a common criticism by Western countries. The claim angers Chinese leaders. The stories in Chinese state media have condemned Kishida's remarks as an insult to China. The stories also say Japan was dishonest about its reasons for offering help. The state publication Global Times said China does not have a problem with other countries offering aid to African nations, but it opposes Western countries such as the U.S. and Japan trying to make African countries distrustful of China. The Africa Center for Strategic Studies says that Japan-Africa trade is worth an estimated $24 billion a year. That amount is also much smaller than China's, a record $254 billion last year. I'm Jill Robbins.
SpaceX chief Elon Musk says he will seek to bring his Starlink satellite internet service to Iran. The billionaire businessman suggested his plans in a message on Twitter. Earlier this week, Musk announced on the social media service Starlink is now active on all continents, including Antarctica. After reading Musk's tweet, Iranian-born science reporter Erfan Kasray then posted his own message to the SpaceX chief. "I'm sure you won't answer it, Mr. Musk, but is it technically possible to provide Starlink to Iranian people?" Kasray asked. "It could be a game changer for the future." Musk did answer Khosrae. He wrote, Starlink will ask for an exemption to Iranian sanctions in this regard. The sanctions he commented about are linked to Iran's nuclear activities. The restrictions bar a wide range of U.S. companies from doing business with Iran. SpaceX owns and operates Starlink, a network of satellites launched into near-Earth orbit. Since the network is satellite-based, it is designed to provide high-speed internet service to rural and underconnected areas of the world. SpaceX says the service aims to produce internet speeds up to 300 megabits per second to all areas of the world. In the United States, the service costs $110 a month, with a one-time cost of $599 for equipment. The service costs less in some other parts of the world. So far, more than 3,000 Starlink satellites have been deployed to space. SpaceX launched the latest set of 54 satellites on Sunday. In a video released on social media in June, the company said the Starlink service had nearly 500,000 users in 32 countries. Several people asked Musk on Twitter to provide the satellite-based internet service in Iran. Musk's suggestion that he will seek an exemption to offer the service in Iran came as widespread protests took place in the country's Kurdistan province. The area is home to Iran's Kurdish minority. The demonstrations were held to protest the death earlier this month of a 22-year-old woman who died while in police detention. The woman, Mahsa Amini, was arrested by officers of Iran's Morality Police. The United Nations Human Rights Office condemned Amini's death and called for an investigation. The UN body says the country's morality officers have expanded their activities in recent months. They have targeted women for not correctly wearing the Islamic head covering known as a hijab. Iranian police have denied mistreating Amini and said she died of a heart attack. Iranian officials have said they are investigating the incident. In Iran, access to social media and some media content is severely restricted. In recent days, the internet watch group NetBlocks reported a near-total disruption to internet connectivity in the capital of Iran's Kurdish area, where the protests took place. Shortly after Russia invaded Ukraine, Elon Musk announced that the Starlink service had been established in Ukraine. His announcement came after the NetBlocks group said it had confirmed major disruptions to internet service across Ukraine after the start of the invasion. SpaceX said recently it had deployed more than 15,000 Starlink receivers to Ukraine. Musk said earlier this year that Russian forces had not been able to disrupt the Starlink service. In April, the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, announced it had helped provide 5,000 Starlink receivers to Ukraine through a public-private partnership with SpaceX. USAID explained the Starlink system deployment in a statement. It said the receivers aimed to permit public officials and critical citizen service providers to continue to communicate within Ukraine and with the outside world when other communication services were disrupted. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We begin the story of a document that defined a nation, the United States Constitution. The 13 American colonies declared their independence from Britain in 1776. But they had to fight for that independence in a long war that followed. During that war, the states were united by an agreement called the Articles of Confederation. But the Union of 13 states was loosely organized. The Articles of Confederation created a weak central government. The document did not create courts or provide for a president or other executive to carry out laws. The Articles of Confederation did create a Congress, but that legislature had little power or money. When British General Charles Cornwallis surrendered at Yorktown, Virginia, a messenger brought the news to the Congress. But Congress could not even pay the messenger. So money had to be collected from each member. The war ended in 1783 with the Treaty of Paris. Even before then, three influential Americans had called for a change in this loose confederation of states. The three were George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and James Madison. They urged the formation of a strong central government. George Washington commanded America's troops during the Revolution. He opposed the Articles of Confederation because they provided little support for his army. His soldiers struggled with shortages of food, warm clothing, shoes, and other supplies. Here is an actor playing George Washington in a show at the National Archives. He is talking about the Articles of Confederation.
In my mind, it prolonged the war by several years. Every time I needed men or money to prosecute the war, I had to go to 13 sovereign heads of state hat in hand. Even now, under peacetime conditions, we are like a giant with 13 heads tottering towards a cliff.
Alexander Hamilton was a young lawyer who served as an aide to General Washington during the Revolution. Hamilton called for a convention of the 13 states to create a new central government. He expressed his opinion in letters, speeches, and newspaper articles. Finally, there was James Madison. He was one of the authors of the state constitution in Virginia in 1776. When Madison, Hamilton, and Washington looked at the Articles of Confederation, they saw an unhappy picture. There were 13 governments that each tried to help themselves at the expense of the others. Each state had its own army. Nine states had their own navy. The states had these forces to protect themselves from each other. For example, Virginia passed a law which said it could seize ships that did not pay taxes to the state. Virginia did not mean ships from Great Britain or Spain. It meant ships from other states, like Maryland and Pennsylvania.
Basically, the thought was, we need a military defense structure, we need a modest army and a navy, we need to regulate trade with Europe, and individual states in a loose confederation won't do the job.
Akhil Reed Amar is a professor at Yale Law School. He says Americans realized a strong central government could improve their national security system. In 1786, representatives from Maryland and Virginia met to discuss opening land for new settlements along the Potomac River. The Potomac formed the border between those two states. The representatives agreed that the issue of settling new land was too big for just two states to decide. Someone asked, why not invite Delaware and Pennsylvania to help? Someone else said all the states should be invited. Then they could discuss all the problems that were giving the new nation so much trouble. The idea was accepted, and a convention was set for Annapolis, Maryland. The convention opened as planned, but it was not much of a meeting. Representatives came from only five states. The men who did meet at Annapolis, however, agreed that it was a beginning. They agreed, too, that a larger convention should be called. They appointed the representative from New York, Alexander Hamilton, to put the agreement in writing. So Hamilton sent a message to the legislature of each state. He called for a convention in Philadelphia in May of the next year, 1787. The purpose of the convention, he said, would be to write a constitution for the United States. The nation was new, but the idea of a constitution was not. Law professor Akhil Reed Amar explains that the earliest settlers had formed political agreements called compacts, charters, or corporations. These agreements developed into state constitutions.
And then, in 1787-88, the idea becomes to try to continentalize, to take on a much bigger scale this idea of a written constitution setting forth the rules for how people would govern themselves, what government could do and not do, what their powers would be, and what the limits would be.
Even so, he says, Americans were not sure about creating such a constitution. Amar says they were afraid a new central government might be as arrogant and out of touch as the King of England had been. However, most people slowly came to believe that a strong central government would protect their country better than the loose union of 13 states could. Many people also believed that a constitutional convention would not succeed without George Washington. People wanted to elect him president of the convention, but Washington did not want to go. He suffered from rheumatism. His mother and sister were sick. He needed to take care of business at Mount Vernon, his farm in Virginia. And he already said he was not interested in public office. George Washington was the most famous man in America. Suppose only a few states sent representatives to the convention. Suppose it failed. Would he look foolish? Two close friends, James Madison and Edmund Randolph, urged George Washington to go to Philadelphia. He trusted them, so he said he would go as one of the representatives of Virginia. From that moment, it was clear the convention would be an important event. If George Washington would be there, it had to be important. The first delegate to arrive in Philadelphia for the convention was James Madison. Madison was 35 years old. He was short and losing his hair. He was not a good speaker, but he always knew what he wanted to say. He had read everything that had been published in English about governments, from the governments of ancient Greece to those of his own time. Madison believed the United States needed a strong central government that was more powerful than the 13 states. Madison also knew that he should not push his ideas too quickly, so he planned his work quietly. He came to the convention with hundreds of books and papers. He was prepared to answer any question about government that any other representative might ask him. Madison asked the other delegates from Virginia to also arrive early. He wanted to enter the convention with a plan for a strong central government. He was sure no other state would do this. Two Virginia delegates came early as requested. Together, the three men worked on Madison's plan. The only other delegates there were from Pennsylvania. Nobody seemed worried that there were no delegates from the other 11 states. After all, it took 2 weeks to ride a horse to Philadelphia from New Hampshire in the Northeast, and it took as long as 3 weeks to get to Philadelphia from Georgia in the South. Finally, the other delegates started coming, a few at a time. 55 men in all from 12 states. Pennsylvania sent the most delegates, 8. Rhode Island sent none. A few of the delegates were very old, but many were in their 20s or 30s. The average age of the delegates was just 43 years. From the moment the convention began, Madison kept careful records of everything everyone said. He never stopped writing. If it were not for James Madison, we would know little of what happened at that historic meeting in Philadelphia in 1787. Later, Madison explained how he did it. He wrote, "I sat in front of the president of the convention. All the other delegates were on my right and on my left. I could hear everything the president said. I could hear all the words of every delegate. I made notes only I could understand. Then, at night in my room, I wrote out completely all the speeches and acts. I attended the convention every day. I was there as long as the delegates were meeting and talking." James Madison's full records of the convention were not published until 30 years later.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.